You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Side Community News, and today it's a special day because James Boyd from the Indianapolis Star, for now, is here to talk Pacers during his last week still on the beat for the Star. Happy to have James around. Today we're talking about the biggest storylines left for the Pacers this summer in the non-free agency division. Everybody can tell you about Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell and all this crap that I'm so sick of talking about. There's a lot of other stuff that's going to matter for the Pacers between now and training camp. I want to talk about with James today. James, how are you? Are you flying off into the sunset? How has this week been for you?
It's been crazy trying to get as much stuff done as I can. The caveat of saying you're leaving is that you give people a chance to say goodbye, but then you get flooded with a bunch of messages and stuff like that, and you still have to work. So that's the part that I was a little annoying. It's like, oh my gosh, like I put this out there and now I'm feeling bad because I'm not responding to everyone. But I still have Pacers stuff I had to do this week. Most of it is done. Still got a couple things left, you know, in the cooker. But excited to, you know, obviously have a different opportunity ahead of me. But thankful for my time here.
You got to just tweet like a peace sign and then not stop tweeting about basketball. I think that's how you go.
I wanted to tweet the Nick Saban video where he's like, you know, they keep asking the same question, like, stop asking, you know, quit asking. I wanted to do that, but that would have been a little too rude. So
we're talking storylines today, non-free agency, non-trades division, although one of mine is a little bit cheating towards that, but we'll get there when it's time. I'll go first, although I should let you go first because this is all about you. It's your last time you have to talk to me ever in your life. You got to take full advantage of it. My biggest thing that I am thinking about for the Pacers this summer, my most curious thing is, what the hell are they going to do with their big man and front court rotation? There's a lot of names in the mix at those spots. We know Jalen Smith's going to start at the four. If Miles Turner's still on the team, he's going to start at the five. How do they get Goga on the floor? Do they even need to? Isaiah Jackson, does he play? Daniel Tice is on this team. He's their fourth highest paid player. He might be their third highest paid player. Is he just not going to play? How does O'Shea Brissett fit in? Can Terry Taylor play? That's a lot of names that you could pretty easily argue should play, but only four of them, maybe five of them can. And I'll be curious, especially if Miles is still on the team, how they sort that out and how what we learn from Rick Carlisle or others about what their plan is for those spots.
Yeah, I think I actually did a depth chart on the team just as it currently stands with the roster. And I was having the same dilemma of like, okay, you know, I can kind of figure out who would start, but even then, beyond just the label of starters, who do you want to give minutes to? Who do you want to try to develop? Like you said, Daniel Tice is a unique player because he's better than, in my opinion, he's better than Goga. But, like, do you play him over Goga? He's better than Isaiah Jackson right now. Do you play him over Isaiah Jackson? I don't think you should. I think you should give your young guys a chance. He's probably trying to move him, you know, to a contender, or I'm sure he'd probably welcome that, trying to go back to a team that could actually play, you know, make the playoffs. But they're in a weird spot. And then by announcing that Jalen Smith is the starting four, you're basically, you know, obligated to start him at the four, even though another player could emerge over the next few weeks in training camp or something like that. So I think that's another unique thing, is that they were so definitive about Jalen Smith starting right away. I was like, oh, okay, like that's kind of a big deal. And I think Miles is obviously the biggest elephant in the room. Like, what's his future look like? But either way, I think if he's on this team come the start of the season, he's the obvious, you know, starting five. Right. But, you know, you got Isaiah Jackson, you got Goga, you got Terry. I think Terry might have perhaps a better chance to get on the floor and get some minutes than, say, Goga or something, because he can play on the wing a little bit. But it is weird when you get past, like, the guards and who you know, obviously Mathurin, Duarte, and Halliburton being, you know, the top guys.
Yeah, it's tough to sort out because, you know, I guess I could count this as a trade part of the offseason, but they keep everybody, probably two of these three guys will not play at all on opening night between Tice, Goga, and Isaiah Jackson. And I did a fake rotation yesterday, like you did an article about, and I had Isaiah Jackson penciled in behind Turner, but I would understand if they went with Goga, and I would understand I don't think they should, but I get why Tice could play a little bit if they just want like a good screener or a good vet to kind of connect pieces on the floor. So I don't know how they sort that out. And I remember last year I did this exact same exercise and I gave O'Shea Brissett the backup. I gave him minutes on the reserves. And then the first time we talked to Rick Carlisle, he was like, yep, we've got O'Shea working with the third team as the power forward. And we have Torrey Craig playing three and four with the second unit. And, you know, it's like, okay, that's the first noteworthy change from the expectation. Maybe it's a little easier this year, but I'll be curious to find out later this summer how they decide is O'Shea the backup four right away. Maybe that's why they can get Isaiah Jackson in at the four and then go get the five, or do they want Tice to play? I don't know how they prioritize those pieces. So I'll be curious to see that. And I think that is a big bearing on their season. There's a lot of young guys involved there. Miles Turner, obviously involved. He's the most interesting name probably on the roster until camp starts. So that's one thing I'm really curious about. James, give me a storyline for you for the Pacers the rest of this summer.
I think my biggest storyline is, you know, who starts at the two. And really just who starts in like that, you know, obviously the point guard is Halliburton, but who's the other two ball handler slash wings that you have out there? And I went back and forth with, okay, do they start Benedict? Do they start Buddy? I can see the argument for both. Does Chris Duarte come off the bench? Ultimately decided just based off of the youth of the team, I think it would probably be better if they just went ahead and started Duarte and started Mathurin along with Halliburton and just tried to build as much chemistry as possible. Would that upset Buddy Hield? Probably. But is Buddy Hield part of your future? Maybe not. I know we're not talking like trades and stuff like that, but just looking at the timeline, looking at the team, looking at what Buddy Hield could possibly get you in a trade, I think that that's the biggest question is like, you know, winning now, Buddy Hield's probably your best guy to start next to Halliburton. And he has a relationship with him because they played previously. But if you're trying to go all in on your youth, I think that you have to consider starting your number six pick and then starting your lottery pick from last year as well. So I'm curious to see how that unfolds. I think the backcourt is a very unique thing. By backcourt, I don't mean just the point guard, shooting guard. I mean, like, you know, positionless basketball, the three guys on the perimeter. Who are those going to be, and are you going to be consistent with that starting lineup?
I thought it'd be the three young guys as well, Duarte and Mathurin on the wing and Halliburton running the show, just because, like you said, that's the future of the team is at those three spots. And they have other young guys, obviously, but those are the three that, you know, ex-lottery picks already. Looks like two of them are going to be good. Get them as many reps together as possible. I hear the argument for Buddy for a lot of reasons, but the biggest one is, shooting is so helpful for the other guys in terms of spacing, making their life easy, just adding a threat on the floor. And when I talked about the merits of him starting, it's basically that last year their offense was like 10 points per 100 possessions better with Buddy out there than when he wasn't. And they all their shots were just easier because they have more space to do stuff. It's basically 4-on-4 when he's off the ball because the floor is so spread out, but he's away from the play. So that is really helpful for young guys. And if you're trying to get Mathurin space to grow because it's going to be a big jump for him and let Halliburton cook a little more, that makes some sense to me. And I think Duarte would come off the bench in that case, but I'd understand, I guess, Mathurin being the guy to do it. And so maybe they try it with the three young guys. If it's not working, start Buddy over on the wing for someone else. But that one is very interesting to me as well. And like, how do they fit Nesmith into that rotation as well? Another young dude that you got to play somehow. It's tough. And I think you can get all three of, if you manage it like perfectly, Duarte, Hield, and Mathurin all like 30-ish minutes a game. But then no one else is playing in those spots. So balancing those minutes and figuring out exactly who starts and what makes the most sense, I think is going to be tricky. And it might depend on what their goals are on when opening night comes.
Exactly. I mean, like you said, you alluded to, you got Aaron Nesmith, you got Andrew Nembhard. Like, you have players of TJ McConnell. You have players that are going to get minutes, you know, on this team. So I do not envy Rick Carlisle or the front office in trying to figure out, you know, the rotation and the lineup. But obviously, like, a change between now and then as well. But I do think that if it were me, I would just roll with the young guys. And then if it upsets, you know, some of the veteran guys, so be it. I mean, I can't in my mind picture by the end of the season that Miles Turner, Daniel Tice, and Buddy Hield are all on this team come next season. I just don't see that happening. But I do see, obviously, the obvious happening with your young guys and your top picks being around for years to come.
Yeah, and look, if they were okay last year, I think they could sell to those vets, like, you had to come off the bench, but it'll help us win. But I think those vets understand, like, seems not good. You know, it's a development team right now. It's not set up well for them to really showcase their skills and be good vets. You know, even McConnell's going to have to deal with that. And he's used to it with the process Sixers. But new territory for Miles, especially, as they have to figure out what their role is on a developing team instead of a team that's trying to win.
Exactly. I mean, they were 6-20 after the trade deadline, 10-game losing streak to end the season. So, yes, we do not expect them to be, at least in our world, we don't expect them to make some huge jump. I know some people are like, I'm done with this losing stuff. The fans want them to go out and win. And it's like, that's not easy to do in this league, to bottom out 1 year and then go right back and be in the playoffs next year. I think that this is going to be a multi-year process. And this is just year one, really, because I don't even really count the Halliburton. I count the Halliburton trade because that jump starts the rebuild. But this is your first full offseason going into the rebuild. So it's a huge one. And I think that a lot of things will have to change. And in doing so, it will take a lot of time to change those things.
Hey, guys, let's take one short little break here so I can talk to you about betonline.net, the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. You can find all of your favorite sports and event at the number one source for odds, lines, and games, betonline.net. They've got reviews and news of every league, including MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, even golf. And BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you covered. They just sent me odds for the updated NBA title chances after the Celtics reported pursuit of Kevin Durant. Pacers not last, fifth to last at 500-1, although that is technically tied for second to last. Only the Rockets have worse odds. Top two teams right now are the Celtics and Bucks. You can get those lines at betonline.net. Head over there today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action at BetOnline, because BetOnline is where the game starts. So let me cheat now on my second storyline of the summer. It's not about a specific trade or a specific player, so I'm counting this, even though it is technically free agency adjacent. How do they get to the salary floor? They aren't paying enough to their team yet to get to the salary floor. And so for those who don't know listening, what happens is if you don't hit the floor as a team, at the end of the season, a cash goes to your players and they get paid more to get your team salary up to the floor. All the players get a raise. Most teams don't like giving their players raises over their agreed upon contract value. Most teams for all of time have hit the floor. The Thunder last year were the first team in forever, not forever, but a while to not get there. So the Pacers are not there right now. After clearing space for Ayton, getting under, losing their trade exceptions, they're below the salary floor. Pretty far below the salary floor, too. Like tens of millions below the floor. So how do they get over it? Is that a big trade like the ones that have been rumored? Is that a renegotiation, an extension with Miles Turner? Is that a free agent signing for a random player who probably isn't worth that much because no one really good besides Sexton is still out there? I don't know. And they don't have to do it in the summer. They can do it during the season. As long as they're there by the end of the year, that's what matters. So I might be jumping the gun calling this a summer storyline, but they have a roster spot. They have the space right now. I think it's the clock sort of started already on how do they get to this salary floor number that every team in the league hits at some point during the season.
Well, I think they're going to go to Phoenix and grab DeAndre Ayton and just kidnap him and bring him back here and do some 2K storyline where rules don't matter. And by some miracle, he's playing for the Pacers for a max contract. Former Pacer DeAndre Ayton, that is. But on all seriousness,
is that allowed?
Former Pacer? Oh, it's absolutely allowed in my book. Like I am. Look, this is my last week, so all bets are off. I'm going to just start firing off whatever I think is like James Boyd rules. Okay, you had rules coming in. You got Bird's rights. These are Boyd's rights. So that's what I'm going to call it. But in all seriousness, I do think that the biggest thing will probably be one of the easiest moves will be the Miles Turner extension. I do think that the Pacers will probably – I don't know any team that would not fill out their roster spot, especially where the Pacers are. I could see if you're a team, you know, where you're possibly a contender or a playoff team, you want to keep that spot open for, you know, some moves down the line or adding a piece here or there. But for the Pacers, I think that they're going to add someone probably via trade, but I think the biggest thing will probably be a Miles Turner extension. And if not, who do you trade for Miles to get back? And then in doing so, you'll probably get enough salary to hit the floor. Again, it kind of comes down to the relationship factor. I talked about this on different outlets and in my own writing. It's like how much does Miles Turner still want to be here? And on the flip side, how much do they still want him to be here? I have not reported, I have not read anything that says they've offered him an extension and he's declined it, or vice versa, where he's asked for an extension and they didn't give it to him. So I think it comes down to, can they possibly mend this relationship with Miles Turner? Is it worth mending? Or do they move on and try to, again, just go full on young and kind of move on from everyone they had from the previous regime?
Yeah, the renegotiation extension that ups his salary this season could get them to the floor pretty easily, and then he could be tradable in future seasons. That could be a way to mend your relationship with a guy who's like, look, we know we just drug you through the mud. Here's a bunch of cash. Great. You know, that seems good. And you remember from X interviews, that's something Miles said to Jalen Smith, get your money, right? And he even said, like, yeah, I thought, the extension thing has crossed my mind before. You know, I think it is something that he's thought about, but his situation, how he feels about the franchise, its direction, he could be an unrestricted free agent for the first time of his career a year from now. These things have to have crossed his mind. So that is, I think, if they don't make a trade or sign, I mean, there's no one worth an expensive contract still out there. I think the easiest way to balloon their salary, but he could just say no, and then they can't do it. So it's not an easy thing to do. It could be something that lingers into the season, but that still suggests to me like a big, if they go like with the team they have right now, let's say they just add Kendall Brown on a two-way and get some minimum dude in for camp. Like they're like $15 million from the floor with their team. Like that means like, during the season at some point, like this huge trade could still happen. And yeah, that's not a bad thing, but it does, open up a lot of interesting possibilities about where this roster could be headed. And I think that's a pretty big storyline, even though there's no, until the trade deadline, I suppose, no real deadline to cause the Pacers to be like, we have to do this right now. So maybe it's not a summer storyline, but as a cap nerd, it is a summer storyline to me. James, hit me with another one. What you got? Summer storylines for the Pacers.
Man, I really just think what it'll be like with Bendik Mather coming into his rookie season. That's like an easy softball one. But with as much like commotion that was made about the LeBron quote, and you got to show me how great he is, I thought that Bendik actually did pretty good in summer league to at least, keep the quote-unquote haters or people that were going to jump all over him off his back for now. But now the narrative is like, okay, it's just summer league. Can you show me, what you're going to do in the regular season? Can you show me that you're everything that you say you're going to become? I thought it was interesting when we talked to him after practice in Vegas, and he tells us, hey, I don't think that any player drafted ahead of me is better than me. I want to go out there, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, I want to go out there every time and show everyone that, the Paolos, the Jabaris, the Keegans, none of these guys are better than me. And when he answered the question, before he answered it, he was like, he literally like shook his head and like kind of like thought about what he's going to say. And he just said it anyways, which I love. I mean, as a media member, we got to love it when people just say how they really feel. But I think that there is going to be some aha moments where it's like, man, this kid is really good. There's also going to be some, oh man, moments where he's going to get humbled. And I think people are going to gun for him because of that. I think you take a shot at LeBron, you not only take a shot at him, but every player who thinks that they're better than you already. It's like, oh, you're going for him already. But, I mean, there could be – T.J. McConnell could come out and never made an awesome team and just bust you. So, I mean, like, that to me is probably the most enticing thing, is that he's so arrogantly confident. And it's a good thing. I don't mean it, like, in a bad way. But – or maybe the word, better word, is just irrationally confident. And I kind of want to see what happens when he faces that first real adversity, when he has a stinker game or hits that rookie wall, which everyone hits unless you're LeBron, Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant. Like, I want to see how that looks.
Let's just pretend they play Detroit, their first regular season game. I'm going to scale this way down from LeBron James. How does Bendik Mather do against, like, Corey Joseph?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you know what I mean? And he aimed for LeBron. Like, you got to be good. You know, he was good in summer league, which is a good start. Very good. Like, had to get pulled.
But as you know, 90% of those guys are not playing in an NBA game. So it's like, you looked great. But, I mean, quite frankly, by the second half of the 10 days out in Vegas, none of the top guys are playing anymore. And you start to realize, like, the gap between even just, like, draft picks and, the guys who are trying to work their way into the league on a two-way or undrafted, undrafted rookies, like things like that.
So I think he will be like his handle's not his strong suit, right? So I think that he will be good at times, especially as a shooter as a rookie, but will definitely have some rough patches, like against his first good defender or his first huge defender. Like, everybody talks about the speed and strength of the NBA game being surprised at some point during their rookie season, except for Chris Duarte, who was apparently very prepared last year every time we'd ask him about that. But every other rookie has always talked about that. I'll be curious who it is for him and when it is for him that that clicks, and that if it doesn't change his irrational confidence, that will be cool. An interesting part of his story. But if it does, you know, what does he start saying and how does he start reacting when, like, for example, LeBron scores 40 on him or something like that?
I mean, you better believe that someone somewhere has marked that comment down, put it in the memory bank. LeBron aside.
You think the Lakers, who are trying to win a championship this year, have Benedict Mather in his bulletin board material?
I think that they're going to have a lot of whatever they can muster up, because they're not a championship caliber team at all. You put me on the record for this. Like, if they run it back with that same team, I don't care if they're healthy and they've all played all 82 games together, that team will struggle to make the playoffs. And if they do, that to me is probably the highlight of their season. But yes, I do think that, I mean, that's all jokes aside, that's every athlete everywhere. Like, they always find some slight, and if you just give it to them, that's just one more thing for LeBron and company to use as motivation. But I like it, though. I like that he kind of called him out. And the other thing is, like, whether you said something or not, they were kind of like, these guys are going to humble you at some point.
Right.
I mean, I talked to Tyrese Halliburton, did that column a long time ago. At this point, it was after the season ended, and he told me that Trey Jones was the one who killed him. Trey Jones. So I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like, Trey Jones is a pro basketball player, but it lets you know the level you're going to be on. Like, any guy on any given night could really kill you. And then how do you respond to that? So I'm excited for that, to see how that plays out. And as well as his chemistry with, you know, Rick Carlisle. I know Rick Carlisle has been not under fire, but, like, the narrative around him has always been he doesn't want to rebuild, he doesn't want to go through this. But, like, Benedict, you know this, he's spoken highly about Rick. He's had a really good level of respect for him. Worked out twice for the Pacers voluntarily. The second one came back and worked with Rick specifically. So that's another storyline I'm looking forward to. Is just like, okay, how do they develop chemistry, and how does Rick handle having, you know, a potential star? He had one with Luka. Things kind of fell apart. Obviously, Benedict is not Luka. He's not even rated as him or looked at to be him. But I do want to see how that relationship evolves, knowing how the last one kind of ended.
Yeah, Rick is a brilliant strategist and tactician, which is why he got the label of, like, coaching winning teams. But the way he talks about Jalen Smith and Andrew Nembhard and Benedict Mather, and, like, Rick Carlisle loves teaching and figuring stuff out. And I think that maybe he'd prefer – I don't even know that. I've never truly asked, like, that direct of this kind of question. But I think he would like coaching a rebuild, even if it's not necessarily – what he signed up for, what he's the best at, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's his preferred thing or not, and I might just be reading too much into him talking about how much he loves teaching, but I think that's a big factor in this, that could be really fun for him. And he hasn't done that since Luka's rookie year, basically. Storyline number three for me is very boring, but is my favorite one. Actual basketball games. There will be players that we can see play this month. Well, it's, I guess, still July, technically. The Bahamas play in the Americas, the FIBA games, the Americas games with Buddy Hield in late August. We'll see Georgia and Goga Batadze in early September. Chris Duarte just got put out there. He's playing for Dominican Republic in late August. O'Shea Brissett's on Team Canada. Not sure if he's playing or not. He didn't end up playing last year. Either way, this month we could see those guys playing again. We saw Buddy play a month ago and kick some ass for the Bahamas team. I'll be curious to watch those guys play, see if they have any development and what it could mean for their long-term perspectives. It's always fun to have some basketball in between the NBA seasons.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been watching a lot of W lately, so that's always been fun. Like, I get a chance to catch up with every team around the league. And, you know, the W, as you know, is always full of storylines, drama, chaos. Like,
what a year it's been.
Yes. Even the Commissioner's Cup. And things, like, cool stuff like that I've enjoyed. But obviously, you know, you get a chance to get a glimpse of, you know, any NBA player in action. It's always a good time. I mean, I don't know if people watch the Drew League game, but I watched the one with LeBron in it just because it was LeBron. You know, why not watch him? And I do think that Buddy playing doesn't surprise me because he's just a hooper. I don't think he ever takes a day off. When he was at Summer League, part of me really expected him to just go back to the locker room and get a jersey and just go out there because, like, He just plays all the time. There's this weird Buddy Hield thing that he does during games where, like, even during, like, timeouts or something like that, or, like, stoppages or TV timeouts, like, he'll get the ball from the ref and shoot, like, twice before going over to the bench. Like, he's just, like, this obsession. Like, he's like a little kid. He's got to touch the ball. He's got to shoot it. He's got to do something to, like, play the game. So that doesn't surprise me. I don't believe O'Shea is going to play. From what I read previously, he was just, like, on, like, the training camp roster.
That's what I thought, too.
I do know that Goga – I think Goga, this could be huge for him, his development, just to, you know, play a bunch of minutes, play against other professionals, play against other guys that are really, really good, and really get some confidence, too. And then Duarte is the one that – I won't say scares me, but I'm taking some precautionary, you know, looks at, in his direction because
– The toe,
yes. And he was – it was not 100% at the start of summer league practice. It was not 100% in Vegas after you played the one game, because after you played the first game, he looked really good out in that game. You know, he was asked about his toe, and he's like, oh, yeah, it got a little stiff, you know, after I sat for a bunch of minutes and came back in at the end. And it's like, all right, you're 25 years old, going to your second year. You don't need any other foot injuries. I mean, you know the Pacers' history. Miles Turner the last 2 years, TJ Warren – you don't want a repeat of that. So it makes me wonder two things. Like, one, is he just fully healthy now? And it's like, oh, like he can play and no like restrictions, no issues, no thinking about it. Or is he doing this because he loves his country this much, loves his, you know, where he's from, but he's not 100%. And there's some risk involved in that. I'm like, I don't know. So I would prefer, you know, just from the outside looking in, for him to not do this. You know, give yourself an entire summer to get healthy, because I will not lie to you, Tony, when I asked him about the toe, I just thought of like a preliminary thing. I just get out the way. And that's why you ask the question, because you don't never they're going to say. And he's like, oh, it's getting better. I'm like, getting better? This injury happened in February. Injury happened in February. It's going to be August soon. So I think that, you know, that's the biggest one that surprised me. Of course, you know, it'd be cool to see him play. But, man, like, if he goes out there and re-aggravates something, like, that's going to be a very, very poor decision in hindsight.
I love watching those games just to see the players, obviously, but I'm sure the Pacers think the same that you just described. Oh, crap. They're playing in games without our training staff, without us around. And, like, Paul George notoriously broke his leg for Team USA in the summer. You know, like, that has happened to them before. That's obviously
he's on the Pacers, which is, like, the most fitting part of all of this. Like, he was a Pacer when that happened.
Right. So I will, of course, be happy to watch them and cover those games to the extent that it makes sense to do so. But I'm looking forward to seeing, especially, I think, Ngoga's case, because he missed two summer leagues and had COVID issues and then a family issue last year. Like, this is the first time he's been able to play and really get a ton of development since being drafted, basically. James, I'll give you an option here. You can do one more storyline, or you can tell me your favorite part about the beat that you're going to miss.
Well, I'll opt for a favorite part about the beat I'll miss. I think it's probably the travel. Like, before I got this job, I hadn't been on a plane since I was maybe like 8 or 9, 10 at the most. My family could not afford family vacations. We're not poor. Like, please, I don't have a sob story. No one has to cry. Like, I had a very good life. Grew up in the suburbs, had my own room, all the stuff I ever wanted. But that was just one of the things that my family never really could afford. So getting a chance to travel around the country and going out of the country to Toronto and sightseeing and eating a bunch of stuff, that I'll miss a lot. And then obviously I'll miss the chance to just be, you know, in these opportunities where you get to really see some guys kind of get it out the mud. I enjoyed, like, talking to Kiefer Sykes, of course. I think everyone knows, like, my relationship with him was pretty good. Terry Taylor, seeing his rise. Dwayne Washington Jr. before he was cut. Seeing him kind of come. Like, those are stories that really I think I'll miss about being on this particular beat with the Pacers. Is like, yeah, it was cool to, you know, talk to the top guys, the Tyrese Halliburtons, the Miles Turner. But because of the team, because they're going through this rebuild, there were so many unique opportunities that came along. And we had the privilege of, like, detailing that. So that I'll miss a ton. And, of course, I'll miss – you all don't know this, but I sat next to Tony at every game, and they would have this song come on, Ski. With, you know, with Young Thug, you know, and the song, there's this part, so it goes, yeah. And I go, I do my little ski. And I would do it every single game next to Tony. I did it a couple Fever games. I probably drove him crazy like he's looking right now, but I'll definitely miss that as well. But yeah, it was the time of my life. Like, I enjoyed it. I'm not leaving because I was upset or they treated me bad or I was looking for some way out. It's just a new opportunity, a new chapter. But I enjoyed all of it and I didn't take anything for granted. Like, that's the one thing I can definitely like have peace with ending it. Like, it wasn't like I, you know, was going through this thing willy-nilly. Like, I knew every opportunity I had to do something, someone else would kill for that opportunity. So it was fun. I mean, I sent it to Joe Dumars at a summer league game in Vegas and told him, you know, his error. I told him, I was like, my dad probably thinks your error is still better than ours, but I don't know. And, you know, I couldn't help but take a jab, you know. But, yeah, those are the things that you'll miss because, you know, if you get those opportunities again down the line. So it was fun.
I thought you were going to make fun of me by saying, I think every home game at some point I would turn to James. It'd probably be the second quarter and like I'll just make up a play. I'd be like, oh, man, Jeremy Lamb's really struggling tonight. And then without fail, one of the next three possessions, Jeremy Lamb is drilling a jumper. Like, yep. Making the play of the game. Like, it happened probably 20 games this season.
Oh, my goodness. It was – well, we saw some crazy stuff. Like, even the Charlotte Hornets game.
Oh,
where they went off and scored like I think it was over 160 or something like that. one quick story for you all, just funny. I had planned on talking to Torrey Craig before he got traded. After that game, he has a Kobe tattoo on his leg. He always wore Kobe's, and it was like I think it was around the anniversary of Kobe's like death. Yeah. And so I figured, okay, I'd known him for a while. Respectfully asked him about it. If he didn't want to do the story, that's fine. But he agreed to do it. And we had set up for me to get a one-on-one with him after that game. And the Pacers not only lose, they get crushed, Tony. Absolutely crushed. And so I go out to talk to him after the press conference, and it's just me and him in the hallway, like, you know, the Pacers PR. And I'm asking him questions about Kobe. And I don't know why I asked this last question. It probably was the most bogus question. But it's Kobe I'm talking about. So I was like, hey, man, I was talking about mom mentality, and they just lost by a million, it felt like. And I was like, Torrey, what do you think Kobe would say about this performance right here? He was like, oh, no, he wouldn't be with this at all. and you know, we kind of laughed about it, but it was the most awkward, funny moment. Just because I was like, I don't know if I should just, like, ignore the fact that they got beat by a million. But he's like, oh, yeah, nah, Kobe would not let this fly. Like, we would be, like, you know, in the doghouse. And I think he appreciated the fact that I just didn't, you know, gloss over the fact that that happened.
They lost by 70.
That was pretty funny. That was, oh, my gosh. That was a mess. And the story turned out to be really solid. I think I was able to portray through Torrey and his admiration for Kobe and, you know, just all the players, they all wear Kobe still. It's the most popular shoe in the league. I think the story came out very well. But that backstory to it was like, I didn't put that line in there, but part of me wanted to just because I was like, man, this is some crazy stuff that just happened here. History, but in the worst way.
Didn't the Hornets technically draft Kobe too? Wasn't it? Or is
exactly,
that not?
Exactly.
Full circle moment.
I know, but I was like, I don't know. This might be a little too on the nose, just a little bit. So,
James, a well done year on the beat. Congratulations. Best of luck to you in wherever you're going next. It was
I
fun
have
to
no see idea what's going to happen. Stop asking me. I don't know where I'm going. I have no idea about my future. Everything is just like, you know, up in the air.
I heard you got a two-way.
Hey, low-key, Pacers, if you need somebody, if you want to hit that floor, hit your boy up. Hit your boy.
Look, That's the story.
I'm at the YMCA every 3 days. I'm like a YMCA all-star. Okay,
grab
like,
the first 30 minutes of this show. The summer storyline is them signing a journalist to a $15 million contract at the salary floor.
Look, you'll never have to worry about me. I'll know every play. I'll know every scouting report. I'll go out there and get you at least 10 missed layups.
But will you do your 4 minutes of homework or 4 hours of homework every week to prepare for your opponent?
Look. I think now we're on this tangent.
I'm running you out of time. I'm sorry.
No, this is totally fine. I'm serious about this. I think this is a non-story, the Kyler Murray thing, because
It is.
If there's anything like Independence Day that I had, or any other college player that I saw have, where they're required to do this stuff, he can totally BS that and get his money. So don't worry about that. Actually, the Zion Williamson contract, the details of that are a lot more intrusive than 4 hours of independent study. But yeah, patience. If you want to pay me $15 million to do 8 hours of study and film stuff, I would do all those things. But you know, to Rick Carlisle, I can't guarantee I'll run any plays. I can't guarantee that. I mean, if you put me in, look, I'm a star. Okay. I don't have a role, Tony. Okay. I'm not coming in to be some glue guy. I'm coming in to, you know, to play alongside Haliburton and be the future of the team. So maybe I'm a little too old. I'm 26. So I might be over the hill, but hey, hit your boy. I'm a rec league all-star. All-star. All YMCA. First team.
I cannot confirm or deny these facts, so you'll have to take James.
Oh, I can deny him. I am not that good. But
if you would like to read his stories as he flies off the beat, IndyStar is the place to go, or on Twitter at RomeoVilleKid. This show is on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, and me at T East NBA will be back next week starting August with TBD. I have potential cool episode Monday, but scheduling be damned. We'll see what happens. Thank you all for listening. Have a great day, and we see you on Monday.